number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quicken Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
You really can't blame us for getting it wrong, right? I mean, please, don't blame all of us who got this series wrong with the Oklahoma City Thunder. I mean, my God, it wasn't that long ago that we were not only contemplating the Thunder losing this series to the Spurs, but the future of Kevin Durant just sitting on the precipice because this series could be disastrous for the Thunder, and instead they turn a Game 1 blowout by the Spurs and have turned it around and beat San Antonio in six games to advance to the Western Conference Finals. And I'm going to give all the credit in the world to two of the stars on the Thunder, Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, for figuring out the nuances of their games in this series to get what they get. Kevin Durant was fantastic tonight. Russell Westbrook continues to be great. But I got to tell you, the Spurs are disappointing here. That's my angle on this. As great as Durant's been, he had 37 tonight with 9 rebounds, and Westbrook again, 28 points, 12 assists. All right, those two are wonderful together, okay? Let me just lay that out. But this is going to be a little rant on the Spurs, who were supposed to come in here better disciplined, who were supposed to come here talented and quick, and a game that's a little bit more complete and not with the drama of trying to find themselves and who they are. They weren't supposed to have any real issues like the Thunder, right? Because with the Thunder, you could get a night like in Game 3 where Westbrook took too many shots and everybody was complaining about it. The Spurs weren't supposed to come in with that kind of baggage. But instead, what did we see time and time again from the Spurs after Game 1? Inability to close out games, inability to make comebacks. Tim Duncan looks old. They can't find contributions from the bench like Oklahoma City can. There has been time and time again more problems with these Spurs teams than I'd seen all year. You gave me a 67 win season. The possibility of the Golden State San Antonio Western Conference Finals was the most intriguing thing about this series, you know, coming into the playoffs. But instead, the Thunder are going, and I don't know what kind of series we're going to get. I think with the Oklahoma City Thunder, I wouldn't be surprised if they lost all four games. I wouldn't be surprised if it went seven. I have no idea what kind of team they'll bring to the Western Conference Finals. But with the Spurs, I mean, come on. Popovich, Kawhi Leonard, LaMarcus Aldridge, the 67-win team that should have gotten more attention than it did. One of the top defenses in the NBA. An amazing home record that was completely shattered in this series. Where did they go? Where did they go in this series? Yeah, it's funny because Kawhi Leonard said after the game, oh, we knew they'd dominate the boards because that's what Oklahoma City Thunder did all series. Okay, fine. Then find what you do well and show us where you're heading. This is insane. And again, I am a little disappointed. This is no knock on the Thunder. I am a little disappointed because all season long, my focus of watching the Golden State Warriors dominate the league to 73 wins was always enjoyed with the caveat of, yeah, but you know what? The Spurs are having one whale of a season too, and I think it's going to be exciting when those square off in the Western Conference Finals. Now, the Thunder are a 3 seed, so this is not like some magical 7 that just caught fire and now we get to figure out how they're going to be eliminated. The Thunder are a very, very good team. They're led by two superstars. And they're well coached, as well as Billy Donovan has coached them. I think this is more of a star-driven team than a coach-driven team. But Steven Adams is giving them tremendous contributions with his rebounding. And now we get to see what Durant and Westbrook can do against one of the best teams to have ever played. But I just wonder what if the Spurs had closed this thing out, what they would have done in that series. I think one of the other storylines coming out of this game was this could have been the final game for Tim Duncan. And how does he retire? Because I know Tim Duncan is probably going to retire as quietly as a mouse, with probably just a brief, yeah, done, thanks. And he was not effective in this series at all, but yeah, 40 years old. What do you want? I wouldn't have put him in that much of a position to be that effective as he needed to be. I don't think he needed to be effective at all. He shouldn't have been. But, you know, 34 minutes tonight, 7 of 14. He did have 19 points, but we could have been watching him in his final game. So there you have it, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Golden State Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. Let's see where that one goes. 800-777-2907. I'm also a little down tonight because the Nashville Predators got routed by the San Jose Sharks in their Game 7. And I'm really disappointed because this is the one thing that I shared with my neighbors. As my wife and I and our family are getting ready to leave Nashville to head to the back to the Northeast in a week or so, this Nashville Predators team was something that I really got to enjoy with my friends here and my and our neighbors. We were all kind of talking about the game this afternoon and couldn't wait to watch it. And I watched the first period at my neighbor's house tonight and just, you know, getting, and then the Sharks went up 3-0 and that was pretty much it. The party dispersed immediately after that. I was a little disappointed, but the Sharks are a really good team. That should be a good series with St. Louis. That the Sharks are a good team. Jason Day leading the Players' Championship, fired a 63. He is at 9 under par. Jordan Spieth, though, shot a 72. Had a couple of bad shots. His first round since the Masters meltdown at Augusta. He'd taken about a month off. But he's not alone at even par. Ricky Fowler shot a 72, as did Rory McIlroy. So they're all at even par, but Jason Day blistered the TPC of Sawgrass for a 63. So those are your headlines on the night tonight. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Rick Velota joins us from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. We're going to talk about the Raiders possibly going out to Las Vegas. And is this going to happen? Because I've gone down this road a number of times with teams threatening to move or looking like they're going to move and getting a city kind of excited. This seems to be a little bit more entrenched than other times the NFL has flirted with moving. This looks like it's got some legs. How much legs? And is Las Vegas being used as a ploy to get a better deal in Oakland? We'll talk about that coming up at the bottom of the hour. 800-777-2907. But tonight, the real headline is going to be about how Oklahoma City rebounded in this series against San Antonio. And you don't have to go back that far to game one, where the Spurs routed the Thunder. 124-92 was the final score of that one. That is a 32-point victory. And it looked like the Thunder were a mess. And the conversations that people were having, and including this show, we started wondering, wow, if the Spurs have their way in this series, what does it mean for Kevin Durant? What does it mean for him looking at his own team, looking at his own organization, and does he see a winner there? Does he see a chance to break out and win? And if he doesn't, if he looks around and says, this team is not capable of beating even the Spurs, let alone Golden State, then I got to find a place to go. Remember, we contemplated Durant going out to Golden State and whether or not he should join the Warriors in pursuit of the ring. Would he go to Los Angeles and work with the Lakers in a rebuilding process? That didn't seem likely. We started throwing out all these possibilities, and maybe the best possibility now is that he stays put in Oklahoma City and continues to do this thing with Russell Westbrook, where after this game one loss, they took 4 out of 5 from the San Antonio Spurs, a team that won 67 games during the regular season. And not only that, a team that lost one game at home all year, and the Thunder beat them at home twice. Routed in game one, and then took 4 out of 5 to close out the series. That is a sense of guys coming together and letting a game like game one roll off their back. Just like the Lakers did in the 1985 finals. This had the same kind of blueprint. Get routed, but get the split. Get routed in game one, get the split. And then after that, see where this goes. And after the Thunder lost game three, I think many people thought, okay, this is where the Spurs sort of kick it in that gear and then they'll take over. No, they never did. In fact, you didn't even have a sense that the Spurs were in trouble even after they lost game four. And they lost game four by 14 points. But I never felt the Spurs were in trouble. Oh, they'll win game five and possibly win game six. Well, they lost game five. And then they lost game six. So now your Oklahoma City Thunder are heading to the Western Conference Finals to meet up with Golden State. And Golden State beat them in all their meetings this year. But coming up next, it's one of the most iconic sports events that we have on the global calendar, and it's in huge trouble. We'll talk about the Olympics next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. 800-777-2907. I like Tom Petty. I've always liked him. I don't know why, but I just liked his music. No matter whether it's this or any other stuff he's done. I like Tom Petty. All right, let's go to Kenneth in Houston. Wants to talk NBA playoffs after the Spurs were eliminated as Oklahoma City advances in six. What's up, Kenneth?
Hey, Tony. I appreciate you taking my call.
All right, what's on your mind?
First off, I had a question about my Rockets coaching search. I wanted to see who you thought would take it.
Oh, wait a minute. Now, hold on, Kenneth. You want to talk NBA playoffs. I don't want to care about the Rockets coaching search right now. Go ahead. What do you want to talk about the playoffs?
I was going to go with Cavs in either five or six, depending upon the opponent. And I'm going with Golden State.
All right. I'm going to put you on hold for a second. I don't care about your picks for the playoffs. You want to talk about the playoffs? We'll talk about the playoffs. I don't care about your selections. Care about if you want to ask a question or you want to get something in. But don't trick Adam up. If you tell Adam you want to talk NBA playoffs, talk NBA playoffs. I'm not going to get into the coaching search of the Rockets yet. All right, there you go. See how I'll get more assertive I'm getting now?
Yes.
It's actually kind of pretty cool. Don't be such a pushover, Tony D. by the way, the Rockets, go with Jeff Van Gundy and don't look back. Or go with Kenny Smith and don't look back. Who's a better candidate for the Rockets? Kenny Smith or Jeff Van Gundy? Kenny Smith thing really intrigues me.
It does.
Do you not? I mean, wouldn't you love to see Kenny Smith just coach that team?
I just want to see him yelling at referees.
I'd love to see it. I'd love to see Kenny Smith coach this Rockets team. I would love it. Just from an entertainment standpoint. Just do it. Don't give me the same old. Don't go out and get me a Frank Vogel or whoever. I love Frank Vogel. Give me a Kenny Smith. I want to see Kenny Smith on the sidelines.
I want to see Kenny Smith with Chuck as an assistant and Shaq and Ernie.
If they hire Kenny Smith, that means I don't get Kenny Smith on the TNT broadcast, and I love that too.
Do both. I mean, the Rockets are going to be bad, so...
Yeah, why not?
They'll all four sit on the bench and do the show from the bench, and Kenny Smith doesn't need to go into the locker room at halftime, so he'll just sit out there and do the show.
Here's what I think. I think what you do is you give Kenny Smith the job, and then TNT tells him, the second you're done, you get to have the job again. You get to come back to us.
Right, when Daryl Morey fires you after 6 months.
When Daryl Morey fires you and you go, or you say, I can't do this. This is insane. What was I thinking? You could come running back to the warm embrace of the TNT broadcast. That's what you could do. So there you go. All right, I want to get into the Olympics because I love the Olympics. And I look forward to it every 2 years, summer and winter. I don't care. I love the Olympics. This one I'm really nervous about, and more nervous than any other time that I've covered, you know, or followed the Olympic Games. 2004, I heard tremendous stories about how Athens wasn't going to be close to being ready for the Olympics. But in the end, they were able to get the Olympics done, and while there were some issues, and they ended up in a pretty bad economy, they did pull off the 2004 Olympic Games. 2008, I don't think anybody was worried about what Beijing would do. Beijing the government completely ran it, and the government tried to make sure that Beijing put on a really good face for the Olympics. People were arguing about human rights violations and boycotting the Olympics for those reasons, but the readiness of the city of Beijing was really not in question. I had a friend of mine in Colorado Springs who went out to the Olympics, and when he came back, he did an hour with me on radio, an hour just talking about about the stories of covering the Olympics and being in Beijing and all of the things that go on. And we had a tremendous time talking about that city. And he said, listen, you knew it was taken care of, if you know what I mean. You knew that it was clean for a reason. You knew that it was organized for a reason. That aspect of the government was the overriding feeling about those Olympic Games, but everything was going on the up and up, and everything was nice and clean and looked great. This Olympics is a mess. It's a disaster. And I love the Games, and I think they're important for world conversation and sort of bringing sports together. And we've had great Olympic moments in this country, and I don't want to lose that. I don't want the sports to be diminished because of what's going to happen this summer in Rio. But it's a mess. There's an impeachment of the president. The economy is in massive trouble. Things don't look like they're ready. The water is massively polluted. The Zika virus, they don't have an answer for. In other words, everything about the Olympic Games seems to be heading towards a real disaster. The water is a complete mess. It is a real mess. And not only that, you have this anti-doping situation that's going on where now you have the doping league has got, you know, finding that there were violations in various countries. It doesn't look like this is going to be a good summer, so sort of that feel good, let's bring the world together and play some games sort of aspect to these Olympics. My question is, how much are we going to see as an American culture, as a sports culture? How much are we going to see about the problems? How much of the problems are going to be reported? Or is NBC going to be giving us all the great things about the Olympic Games and not some of the major issues and controversies? I wonder, because that's not what the Olympic Games usually does. We don't get a lot of the side problems. We usually get the sports and the pageantry, which is fine because that's what Americans want when they come home from work and they're settling in at night on a summer night. They want to watch track and field, or they want to watch swimming, or they want to watch these events, and they don't necessarily care that there are hypodermic needles in the ocean or that the water is polluted, or the septic systems are overflowing, or the poverty is ripping through the city, or venues are half built, or all of the things that we keep hearing time and time again. It's time for the United States to make a bigger stand to the IOC. The United States hasn't hosted an Olympic game since 1996. That was 20 years when it was in Atlanta. And I know, the world's a big place, and everybody wants their piece of this pie. And not every city wants the Olympics and wants the mess that comes with it. But can we all admit that these things need to start being done and taking place in cities in the Western Hemisphere that could actually pull this off? London, Chicago, New York, L.A., I don't care. But I don't need a nation that's got a lot of its own economic issues, and Brazil in a recession right now can't answer these basic things of how do you fix the Zika virus? How do you prevent this from spreading? How do you clean up the water? How do you make sure that the venues are right? How do you make sure that the housing is going to be fine? How do you make sure that these games where the world is going to be watching are going to be showcased? Because there were problems with the World Cup, but we didn't really hear about it. It was the same thing that happened at the Olympic Games, where there's going to be problems, but no one's going to say anything about it. London pulled this off brilliantly in 2012. I really hope Rio gets its act together. I like the Olympics. I do not want them destroyed. I do not want them ruined. I don't want to look back in the summer of 2016 and say, what a mess. What a disaster. I grew up where the United States boycotted the Moscow Games over political issues, and then I watched the Eastern Bloc countries boycott the 84 Games in Los Angeles for the same political differences. It's time some countries start saying, for the safety of our athletes, we ain't going. And you know what? Everyone will survive. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. Thanks for joining us. And we've been talking about the NFL, and we mentioned that the Oakland Raiders may be moving to Las Vegas, and the mayor of Las Vegas seems confident. And I like relocation conversations because there's a lot of moving parts in them. So let's get it from the Las Vegas side. Rick Velotta joins us from the Las Vegas Review-Journal, and he joins us here to talk a little about NFL and possibly going to Las Vegas. How are you, Rick?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. Before we get started, I need to kind of make a disclosure that the Adelson
sure.
family, one of the backers of a proposing to build this $1.4 billion dome stadium in Las Vegas, also runs the Las Vegas. He owns the Las Vegas Review Journal, which is my employer. So I need to kind of say that right up front.
Sure. Okay. No problem. Thank you. Let's start at the beginning. When did the early conversation started brewing, at least from a media and maybe a fan sense that, whoa, the Raiders might be interested in Vegas?
Well, the first thing that really happened was that we heard these reports about a stadium being built, and the immediate reaction was, oh, this is great because this is for UNLV. They've got a problem because their home stadium is like some 10 to 15 miles away from campus. And what they're talking about doing is probably building something that's a lot closer to the school, right off the campus. And so we thought, oh, fantastic, a stadium. So that's where it first started, when we heard those types of reports. Then it came into the conversation that maybe, just maybe, we could possibly have the Oakland Raiders as a tenant, which was, I think, a big surprise to just about everybody in town.
A lot of these situations where there's an open city gets used as a sort of ploy to get local dollars for where the team is actually in. Is there any feeling like Vegas is being played a little bit here?
I think that was the immediate thought. But when Mark Davis actually came to Las Vegas and made a presentation to a state committee that's making recommendations on tourism infrastructure, I think a lot of those worries kind of went away because it was all quite sincere. Now, of course, you know, when you actually hear people say that, you think, okay, yeah, he's just playing a great poker hand here. But at the same time, I think there was a lot of skepticism that was going on when he initially came into the building. But then as things progressed, they got to know each other a little bit better. And I think that Mark Davis is actually quite sincere about moving his team to Las Vegas if everything comes up the way he wants it to.
How does the NFL, or what's the riding feeling about the gambling aspect of Vegas and marrying that with an NFL franchise?
Well, of course, that was one of the big concerns because all along the NFL has not really held Las Vegas in very high regard. If you recall back in the late 90s, The NFL would not even allow Las Vegas to advertise itself during the Super Bowl broadcast. And every time we turned around, there was something that was going on why the NFL didn't appreciate Las Vegas. And, of course, it was the whole gambling aspect. Now, there's a lot of owners in the NFL who have these old school feelings, but we're also starting to see kind of a thaw in that. And so we're seeing some indications that maybe some of these owners are starting to come around. Of course, just recently here we had Jerry Jones make a really nice pitch on behalf of Las Vegas. So I think that you're going to see a lot of these owners are looking at Las Vegas as a potential new market that might be successful. And there's a lot of things that would have to fall into place before that happened. But certainly the gambling aspect is starting I think that's that whole freeze is starting to thaw.
Rick, what's the demographic? Yeah, go ahead.
One other thing, too, is that you have to remember that they play, a couple exhibition games a year in London at Wembley Stadium. There's gambling on sports betting
sure.
right there at the stadium. So it's not like this is unprecedented.
What's the demographic makeup in terms of people who live in Las Vegas and getting around a team, a local team? Are there a lot of locals or a lot of transplants that would back this? What's the early read on the population?
Well, we've got a little bit more than 2 million people who live in Clark County, which is the county in which Las Vegas sits. And probably a good 50 to 60% of those come from someplace else. A lot of them come from California, and a lot of them have been Raiders fans beforehand. And then the other part of it is that we've got a kind of a whole city of people who come here on a weekend because either they're here to enjoy themselves or they're here for conventions. And so we have this constant inflow and outflow of people that come through. But the residents that live here are, most of them have come from someplace else. I've come from someplace else. So that is pretty much the same, pretty much across the board here.
What's the read on local businesses? Obviously, the casinos are big, but are there any other local businesses that would be willing to support financially the sponsorships that go along with a professional team?
Well, there obviously the casino and tourism industry is the largest, and Nevada is in a situation where we're trying to diversify our economy, so we're looking at all these different types of businesses to come in to make that diversification, so that if ever there's some kind of a downturn in the economy, that we won't get socked like we did back in 2007. So there aren't any really huge corporations that are not gaming. There are some. There's some high-tech companies that are here, probably not household names for most of the people in listening to this. But certainly the thing is also is that Las Vegas is kind of magical in terms of everybody knows where we are and everybody sees it. So if you put those things together, for example, T-Mobile is not a company that's based here, but they put their brand on the recent arena that was built behind the New York Hotel Casino.
Rick, what about stadium financing in terms of taxpayers, and is that something that people are behind, or are they okay with? How does that process work?
Well, again, like you said at the very beginning, there's a lot of moving parts here, and that is one that is part of the moving parts equation. And it still hasn't been completely figured out. There have been a lot of proposals that have been issued, a lot of people talking about different things. Right now, the ownership of the Raiders has committed to spending, I think it's $500 million, and some of that would be in the form of a loan from the NFL. Then there has been the developers, and that is Las Vegas Sands Corporation and Majestic Realty. They are the developers that are primarily behind this. And then there's a component of public funding. And that's where it gets a little bit tricky, because a lot of the people here in town don't want to see any tax money at all used to finance a stadium. And this is probably not a fight that hasn't happened in other venues as well. This is something that goes on all the time. But right now, the total ask from the proposal is $750 million in tax money. Well, where does that come from? It probably would come in the form of hotel rooms. Well, right now we're also in the midst of trying to expand our convention center. We're trying to build some new roads and maybe a light rail system down here in Las Vegas, because we're getting so crowded on the Strip. So all these needs are out there. And that's what this committee is all about Mark Davis spoke before last month. So that's why it's still kind of an open situation. There's going to be another meeting of this committee towards the end of this month, at which they will talk a bit more about just how they can put this together. There have been some proposals out there to increase that room tax percentage. There's been talks about putting together a special tax district around the stadium. There's been talks about increasing the percentage of the tax on rental cars. So it's all right now in proposal stage, but there's a lot of people talking and a lot of ideas being floated.
Rick Velotta, again, Las Vegas Review-Journal, on the possibility of the Raiders heading out to the desert. Rick, great talking to you. Thank you so much for that insight.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, listen to that. Taxes coming from the tourists. Rent cars, hotel tax. And there's money there. I never like it when we have to dip into the public funds for billionaire stadiums. Nobody does. I don't think anybody does. I don't think anybody thinks it's a good idea. All the studies say it's a bad idea. But this Las Vegas thing is really intriguing, because I don't think Mark Davis is playing the city. I just don't. I believe the mayor when she says that she thinks it's a good chance that they'll move there. I think so. I think there is... The NFL is coming to the realization that this city is primed for a professional team of some sort, and the NFL should be at the forefront of it. But $700 million in tax money, probably most of it's going to have to come from tourism. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, thanks for joining us. We talked some Las Vegas Raiders possibility. I hope it happens, actually. I hope it happens. And I'm not for relocation at all. I'm not a real relocation guy. There's something about this that's really intriguing. I don't know why. Because I love Vegas. I loved my time there. I was young. We didn't have kids yet. So my wife and I really, you know, we were a young married couple. Got to really enjoy the city. It's a fun place. I've gone back. I've loved going back. I loved living there, and I hope they get a team. I mean, I met some really cool. The really cool thing about living in Vegas, one of the things I really liked was that I had a guy that worked with me at the sports station we were at, and he's now an airline pilot. And we would go out to lunch, and we were driving down a section of Vegas. We'd head out, you know, west towards Summerlin, and he literally would say, "Oh yeah, when I was in high school, we used to ride our doom buggies out here." And I'm like, "Oh really? Where?" And he goes, "No, right here." Like, we'd be on a road with restaurants all around us, and he'd be like, "No, right where we're at right now." And I'm like, "Oh my God, really? That quick? How long ago was that?" He's like, "About 10, 15 years ago." I'm like, "My God." That's what I loved. So I got to meet some really cool locals, and I think this would be great. I used to tell people all the time, the time I was there in the late 90s, there were three things that people there cared about the most, and that was UNLV basketball, UNLV basketball, and UNLV basketball. And that was it. Everything else was, well, I like the Yankees, or I like the Dodgers, or, oh yeah, I'm from this place, I'm from that place. David Hum, who was a Las Vegas, you know, played for the Raiders, went to Nebraska, played for the Raiders. The station I worked at carried the Raiders, so there was a good little Raider fan base there. I wouldn't mind seeing it. I wouldn't, and I'm not a relocation guy, but I'd love to see Vegas get a team. All right, the Oklahoma City Thunder eliminated San Antonio in six games, and this was kind of a surprise. I got to be honest with you. Despite the fact that this was a 2-3 matchup, after what the Spurs did in Game One, I find this amazing. At San Antonio, with one home loss all year, lost two in this series, and lost 4 of 5 after winning Game One by 32 points. So naturally, how did Greg Popovich take this? Because I think that's where most of us were really curious. Here's Popovich talking about the team and character, and doesn't really want to pick a winner in the next series because he ain't in it.
Coach, guys were out of most of the game, but they made a late charge and nearly brought it back. But talk about the game in the second half.
Well, we hung tough. We got great character, and I expected nothing less. We just went to the second half like it's 0-0 and did the best job we could, and I thought our guys were great in that respect.
What do you think turned the series around for them after game one?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. That's smart. We just lost. Ask Billy.
Coach, going to the next series, having seen both these teams, obviously, who'd you like?
I don't do that.
He doesn't do that.
He does not do that. I love the, I don't know. Like, what do you think turned around after game one? I don't know, man. I don't know. Yes, you do know. You just don't want to share it.
Ask Billy.
Ask Billy. You think Billy knows? Billy's like, you know, I just told my guys to go out there and play basketball. I don't know. I just told Kevin to be Kevin and Russell do your thing. And I don't know. Do we even realize Billy Donovan was the coach of the Thunder in this series?
No.
Not
every
at
once
all.
In a while, they're chilling.
Not at all. Like, my mother-in-law is a huge Gator fan, and my wife's Florida Gator. My whole in-laws, they're just Gator nuts. I was going to put something on Facebook tonight, you know, just sort of, hey, Billy Donovan, way to go, you know? But then I realized I didn't see his fingerprints on this at all as the head coach of the Thunder. I'm sure he gets credit, of course, but this was more like when Russell Westbrook went, yeah, I can't take that many shots. I'm sorry. You know, spread the ball around a little bit. And they used their physical size, and they out-rebounded, and they got second-chance points, and the bench was great. I don't think this was Donovan, you know, manipulating the mindset. But Popovich knows exactly how this thing got away from him, but he's not going to share it. And I don't blame him. Listen, I think there's a few dumb questions, but I've been known to ask a few knucklehead questions in my day. But I would never ask a losing coach of a series who he thinks is going to win in the next round. I just don't. And I wonder how many of those guys do it because they know Popovich, so they know they're going to get they might get something snarky, and that's kind of what they're looking for. But why would you? Most of these guys don't care. Like here's the thing: don't equate you being a fan with them being a fan. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Popovich doesn't watch any game the rest of the way. If he told me in July, if they said, "Hey, Pop, what'd you think of the Western Conference Finals?" And if he said, "I didn't watch 1 second of it," I wouldn't be shocked. And if he said, "I never watched 1 second of the finals either," I wouldn't be shocked. These guys do this for a living, and they're locked in, and then when it's over, a lot of them just want to decompress. Here's Popovich talking about the legend of Tim Duncan.
Coach, would you comment on Tim Duncan and how he's played down the stretch and playing maybe his last night, or his last night?
Why do you say that?
I'm assuming.
Do you know something I don't know?
I don't.
Okay, I just want to make that clear. Timmy, he was playing really well. So we played him as much as we possibly could because he earned the minutes. He did a really good job.
Can you imagine being that? I don't know how the guys who do this on a daily basis do it. Because listen to that first part of the question where he goes, "Yeah, Tim Duncan, can you comment on him playing and possibly playing his last game?" And then Popovich goes, "Why do you say that?" And I'm sure the guy under his breath went, "Oh my God."
I was cutting the sound up and I just felt awkward. Felt awkward.
"Wait, why do you say that? Do you know something I don't know?" And the guy's probably like, "Oh God, yeah."
Like I wouldn't even ask a question. I'd just sit in the back and get the sound.
Yeah. If I was the guy who asked that, after he said, "Why you say that?" I would have said, "You know what, Pop? Never mind. I don't really care. I just thought I'd throw it out there. You say what you want. I'm out of here." Yahoo Sports Radio.